This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're going to be talking this hour about cosmology, cosmology news update. Now, let's retrace our steps a little bit. When Albert Einstein was writing equations to describe the nature and the shape of the universe, most astronomers believed at that time that the universe was a static place. It wasn't growing or it wasn't shrinking. It was just static. But the theory of general relativity predicted that the universe must be changing. So to make his equations fit the physics of the times, to make the universe a static place, Einstein introduced a cosmological constant into the equation. You might call it a little fudge factor to make the mathematics work. And he predicted that there must be a force someplace to counteract the gravity and keep the universe from changing, from collapsing into itself. Well, comes 1929, and Edwin Hubble discovers that the universe actually was expanding. Now, Einstein looks at this and says, boy, did I make a mistake. This was a tremendous, the biggest blunder of my career, putting that constant in there. I'm going to trash it, take it right out. So now we fast forward some 70 years to 1998. Two groups of modern-day astronomers come to the same conclusion. The universe is expanding and is doing so at an accelerated race, or to put it another way, the cosmological constant returns. Einstein is right. There is something out there, something that we can't see, that is pushing the universe apart. And now there's new data from the Hubble telescope, named after Edwin Hubble, that suggests that this dark energy or anti-gravity force that Einstein predicted is alive and well and will probably be around for another 30 billion years or so. So we don't have to worry about that. But there are still questions that need to be answered about it. For example, does the dark energy fluctuate? Does it change? Has it changed over the periods of 13 billion years of the universe's life? We'll talk about it. We'll also get an update on another recent cosmological finding, including the discovery of two new galaxies that are, well, they're almost as old as the universe, 13 billion years away. They are 13 billion light years away. The universe is almost 14 billion years old, so they're close. They started almost at the beginning. We'll talk about those findings. Let me introduce my guest. Adam Reese is an astronomer at the Space Telescope Science Institute in Baltimore. He joins us from his office there. Welcome back to Science Friday, Dr. Reese.
Oh, thank you. It's very nice to be back.
Thank you. Sean Carroll is a physicist at the Center for Cosmological Physics at the University of Chicago. Thank you for being with us today, Dr. Carroll.
Thanks for having me.
And Richard Ellis is the Steele Professor of Astronomy and Director of the Caltech Optical Observatories at California Institute of Technology in Pasadena. Thank you for being with us today, Dr. Ellis.
Good afternoon.
Adam Reese, did I get it right? Is that how it's all played out?
That's right. that's right. Well,
so we now back saying Einstein was right again?
Well, you know, since that time, we've come up with sort of a sexier name. We call it dark energy now,
right,
instead of
right.
the cosmological constant. But actually, that name is to recognize our ignorance, that we don't know if this phenomenon is due to the same physics that Einstein had invoked 70 years ago, or whether it's physics related, say, more to the physics which caused the universe to inflate when it was young. And so what we're trying to do is make observations with the Hubble Space Telescope of distant exploding stars, and we use these to measure the expansion rate of the universe and try to characterize the fundamental properties of this dark energy and see if it is what Einstein had thought, the cosmological constant, or a different kind of physics.
Well, tell us about this latest set of observations from the Hubble. You looked at supernova, right?
That's right. So this time we used the Hubble Space Telescope as a sort of supernova search engine. We actually found the supernovae with the Hubble Space Telescope, and that allowed us to probe much further back and allowed us to calibrate the universe at a time when this dark energy was just taking hold and beginning to accelerate the universe. And we've compared that to more recent measurements. And in that way, we've been able to assess the sort of permanence of this dark energy. Has it been fluctuating over time, or has it been pretty steady? And our measurements are not very accurate at this point, but it is sort of the first quantitative attempt to do this. And from the data, it looks like the dark energy is possibly permanent, at least semi-permanent. We don't see any large fluctuations in it, and that would seem at crudely to favor Einstein's theory, although we at this point cannot rule out other theories.
I want to get back to you in a little bit, but we have other astronomy news to sort of cover first. Richard Ellis, French and Swiss astronomers, reported early this week that they have spotted the galaxy 13.23 billion light years away. Did they steal your thunder from your...
No, I think it's a very interesting development. The idea here is a very different question, also has the word dark in it, and that's to try to understand when did the first stars switch on in the universe. This is another frontier that's very active in astronomy at the moment. What we're trying to do is to find out, after the hydrogen formed in the universe, when did the very first stars collapse and switch on and shine? This is a very difficult set of observations, but both observations that have been reported in the last month, the work from our own team at Caltech and the work in France, have used another trick of Einstein's, gravitational lensing, that is natural magnifying glasses in space called clusters of galaxies, which allow us to boost our already powerful facilities, the Hubble Space Telescope and a ground-based telescope, the Keck 10-meter telescope, to get a glimpse of the earliest objects switching on in the universe. So these are perhaps the very first sets of objects that have been found at these very remote epochs. We're talking about ages of the universe at that time when the observations were made, of something in the region of a few hundred million years. So we're talking about the universe when it was really in its infancy.
So these must have been smaller objects that hadn't grown quite big yet?
Yeah, that's the exciting development, that the gravitational magnification is very much like an optical lens. Not only does it brighten the object, making it visible, but it also magnifies its apparent size. And so with the exquisite resolution of the Hubble Space Telescope, for the first time we can actually resolve and see how big these objects are. And they're about 50 times smaller than the size of the Milky Way galaxy. So this lends credence to the idea that these small things are amongst the first objects to form, and that they will assemble and merge with others around them to form the bigger galaxies that we see around us today.
How far theoretically back do you think you can find, you know, from the age of the Big Bang, when these first started to form?
Well,
can you find that point, you think?
Yes, I hope so. This is the motivation for a number of future facilities. The James Webb Space Telescope, in some sense a successor to Hubble, planned to be launched in 2012, and a ground-based 30-meter telescope in the works as well, have as their goals to try to discover the era when the very first objects formed. The problem is, in designing these instruments, we have no idea how abundant these objects will be or in what time period they lie. So what we're trying to do in the meantime is use Einstein's relativity and the gravitational lensing to get us a glimpse of the very first objects that might be in these regions. So theorists predict that we might have to look quite a long way further back to find the very first objects, maybe only 100 million years after the Big Bang. The current limits that we've probed with the two most recent discoveries push us back to when the universe was about 500 million years after the Big Bang.
Well, the Hubble is going to, you know, it's not going to be refurbished. Are we going to lose the services of the Hubble and trying to find it?
Well, it's interesting that these measurements desperately need the infrared region of the spectrum. Hubble rather uniquely covers both the optical, that is the part that you and I see, of course, and the infrared region of the spectrum. And one of the most exciting developments that's coming up that would have been on the next servicing mission would be a panoramic camera that would be very effective at infrared wavelengths. So many of the astronomers are very keen to see that facility put into space.
Dr. Ellis, I know you have to go. I don't want to keep you any longer. I want to thank you for joining us this hour on Science Friday.
Pleasure. Thank you very much.
Dr. Richard Ellis, the Steele Professor of Astronomy and Director of the Caltech Optical Observatory at Caltech in Pasadena. Sean Carroll is also with us. He's a physicist at the University of Chicago. Sean, so we know that the dark energy exists, but we know nothing about it, do we?
We know almost nothing about it, actually.
Almost.
We know that it's there.
Yeah.
We know that 70% of the energy in the entire universe is dark energy. And we know that it's more or less the same amount of energy everywhere. That's what Adam was referring to. It doesn't seem to change throughout space or as a function of time very much. So this is the thing that theoretical physicists are banging their heads against the wall trying to understand in the hopes that this banging is going to dislodge some good idea. But so far, it just hurts. We haven't come up with any great ideas.
Well, if the dark energy is 70%, and then they say the dark matter brings it up to about 95 or 6% of dark stuff, and leaves us with 4% of stuff that we can see and we know about, are we better off than anything where Newton was, only knowing what 4% of the universe is made out of?
That's right, because Newton was under the misimpression that what he saw was what was there.
Yeah.
We know better now, and so we know that we can tell what is there not by looking for it directly, but by looking for its gravitational field. That's how we know that there's dark matter and dark energy, because everything gives rise to a gravitational field, so we can discover everything in the universe. And I think that the 1990s are going to go down in human history as the decade in which we figured out what the universe was made of. That only happens once, and we recently did it.
Mm-hmm. Adam Riess, last October you reported data that said the universe underwent a cosmic jerk.
That's right.
Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So as we're understanding this dark matter and the dark energy and how they affect the universe, what we've learned is that the universe has sort of traveled like a car that somebody is driving with one foot on the gas and one foot on the brake at the same time, which is, you know, bad to do. In this case, the gas is the dark energy that tends to make the car accelerate, and the dark matter acts like the brake. If we were to watch this car in the early universe, it would have been slowing down as though the foot on the brake was harder than the foot on the gas. But at some point, the foot on the gas became stronger because the foot was coming off the brake, and now the universe is accelerating. But this motion, this way of driving your car, of course, if anybody's ever tried this, knows it's a very jerky ride. And indeed, that's what we see with the universe, that the universe has been undergoing sort of a jerk as the dark matter gives way to the dark energy.
Now, but we could explain it in a car about the accelerator and the gas pedal and the throttles and things like that. How do you explain a change in speed or acceleration in the universe?
Well, we explain it with, as Sean said, with dark energy and dark matter, but we understand so little about it. So we're trying to make very sensitive measurements of how the car, in this case the universe, is moving, and in that way actually learn things about the nature of the dark energy and the dark matter, how the pedals are going down or up. Of course, another possibility is that we're wrong altogether. It has nothing to do with these pedals. Maybe the engine's conking out. There may be other physics. Maybe we don't really understand gravity as well as we thought.
Mm-hmm. And this could be a form of gravity that we just don't know about.
Possibly.
Hmm. Could it be the presence of another universe affecting us somehow, pulling us or pushing us?
Well, we don't think that's the case, because the universe is defined by what we can what can affect us and what we can feel, we don't think therefore that it's possible within our universe to feel the influence of other universes. But however, we may not really fully understand our theory of gravity, and so maybe what we were learning about when we study dark energy is what we don't know about gravity.
Dr. Carroll, do we need new physics?
Oh, well, that would be great. That's what everyone's rooting for. However, all the data so far are quite consistent with, the new physics of 5 years ago. It's not quite out of date yet. The idea that 25% of the universe is dark matter, 70% is vacuum energy, or the Einstein's cosmological constant, is a great fit to the data. The problem is that it makes no sense to us. It is not at all what we would have expected if we were asked, you know, what should the universe look like? So we're fishing around. We're looking for alternative explanations. And the more you look for an alternative explanation and the alternatives don't come up as strongly as the previous explanation, the more you're convinced that this crazy universe is the one we live in.
All right. We're good. Oh, this is a great topic for discussion. We're going to come back to it. Stay with us. We'll come back and talk about dark energy, the universe, dark matter. Take some of your questions with Adam Riess and Sean Carroll after this short break. Don't go away. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flato. We're talking about cosmology, one of our favorite subjects here, talking about dark energy, dark matter, the shape, size of the universe, with my guest, Dr. Adam Riess, astronomer at the Space Telescope Science Institute in Baltimore, or Balmer, as they say down there. Sean Carroll, a physicist at the Center for Cosmological Physics at the University of Chicago, our number 1-800-989-8255. Dr. Carroll, you were saying that we really don't know what the heck's going on out there, if I might paraphrase what you said. Does that make you feel uncomfortable as a scientist?
No, that makes me feel thrilled. I mean, there's no better time to be thinking about cosmology than right now, because number one, we've learned something absolutely fascinating about the universe that You know, there's dark energy, dark matter, as well as what we know and love. But also there's something we don't understand. So that's a clue. We don't think that our current theories of gravity or particle physics are the final word on anything. And in order to make progress towards whatever the final word is, we need unexpected results to guide us in the direction we should be moving. Dark energy is absolutely one of those. And it's already inspired theoretical physicists, string theorists, people who do general relativity, to come up with new ideas to explain why the universe is this way.
Adam Riess, you agree?
Well, I was just thinking, I'm having some deja vu. I went to graduate school with Sean Carroll, and of course he's a theorist and I'm an observer, which means that we'd always get help on our quantum field theory problem sets from him. And so I'm sort of relying on Sean again, just like then, to come up with what the right theory is.
Because he could say anything he wants to and never be right or wrong, because you have to go find the evidence of it, though.
That's right. But hopefully he gives us some guidance, and he says, go out, and my new theory says if you observe this, if you observe the rate of the expansion of the universe at an earlier time, it should depart from what you expected in a certain prescribed way. And then we go out and we look for that.
Mm-hmm. And so what are you looking for now? What would you like to find to settle this?
Well, actually, I have to say, previous guest Richard Ella said, I would like to see the new camera put on the Hubble Space Telescope, which would allow us to go even further back and find more distant supernovae and trace the expansion history back even further.
Mm-hmm. And is there you think by looking for those supernovae you can actually answer this question about dark energy?
Well, I think we'll continue to get important clues. There are two fundamental aspects of dark energy that we hope to evaluate: the strength of the dark energy and whether it's a permanent feature. And both of those are important clues. As I'm sure Sean could tell you, the different theories for dark energy predict different strengths for the dark energy and different degrees of permanence or transience, and those are, at this point, the best clues we can obtain about dark energy.
And I guess because it is working against gravity, would it be safe to say it is stronger at this time than gravity is?
Yes.
Yes. But it always...
Well, no. I would say no.
Glad we have agreement on that. Now I'm going to get letters. How come scientists don't agree with each other?
Because it is gravity. I think what Adam meant when he said yes is that...
Well, Adam will speak for himself on this one.
Well, repulsive form of gravity that we're less familiar with, but
right.
Seems to be overtaking the attractive form from dark matter. But Sean is right. Specifically, it is all gravity.
Does that mean it's an anti-gravity particle? I mean, if we think, you know, I'm speaking in this science fiction case because I don't really know what I'm talking about. But, I mean, does it mean if a gravity particle is here that the repulsive force is sort of an anti-gravity particle?
Well, it's probably not a particle. It's the dark energy exists in every cubic centimeter of space-time. There's a little bit of energy that doesn't go away. The effect of that energy is to cause two particles in their vicinity to begin to move apart rather than to begin to move together like ordinary gravity.
Mm-hmm. But gravity is explained, if we talk about Einstein, as a physical entity. He talked about warping of space, right? He took
exactly.
So then,
dark energy warps space in a different way than ordinary matter does. Ordinary matter draws other ordinary matter towards it. Dark energy pushes things apart. But it's all just different kinds of space warping.
So continuing that analogy, Einstein had like a funnel where things would fall into, like a black hole. Would dark energy be like a peak of a mountain where you can't roll up to it, keeps you away from whatever is nearby?
It would be like stretching a rubber sheet. So everything is sitting on the rubber sheet, and the dark energy is causing the sheet to be stretched to greater and greater sizes, so things begin to move away.
Oh.
The rubber, if you put a bowling ball on that rubber sheet, then you would put a hole in it that things would fall into. So these things can both happen at the same time.
Good explanation, Dr. Riess?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to the phones, 1-800-989. It's great. We're probing the unknown. 1-800-989-8255 is our number. Let's go out to Pete in San Jose. Hi, Pete.
Hi. I think what I want you to do is try to somebody straighten me out.
Join the crowd.
I've got this idea that between the 13 billion light-year distant galaxy and Earth, there's something like a segment that the light traveled on. And if you extend the segment on either end, does one of the ends point to where the ostensible Big Bang began? Was? Mm. Is there anything we can make out from directionality? Or are all the very distant galaxies that we find in a line or something?
No, it from our perspective, from all perspectives, it looks like you're at the center of an expansion, and we don't believe that there's necessarily any edge to it, and so there's sort of no point in trying to trace back to that origin point. It's a trick of expanding Bekerd space that in all directions it looks like the universe is expanding.
Well, why wouldn't one edge of the universe be closer than the other, if that makes any sense? Why? Wow.
Yeah, it's hard to visualize it, isn't it? It's very hard to visualize it. Yeah.
I forget how many billions.
13.
It's supposed to be old, though. I mean, the universe, yeah. If it's another half a billion light years, why wouldn't that direction be somewhere? I don't
know. Right. The universe is 14 billion years old. Why are we on an edge of it someplace?
And why wouldn't there be
away from,
28 billion years wide? Why
there
we
is,
find
but we can't
longer?
See it. So we see things very far away moving away from us, and there's a point past which we can't see just because the universe is 14 billion years old and light moves at a finite speed, one light year per year. But if we were at the point 14 billion light years away, those people would see us moving away, and they would see a whole part of the universe that we can't see. So every person sees a more or less similar expansion around them, and there's no edge, there's no center, there's nothing outside into which the universe is expanding.
Okay?
No.
Take his word for it.
The metaphors fall short, I'm afraid. It's the whole universe. We can't think of it as anything inside anything else.
Everything looks the same from wherever you are in it, right? Would that be correct? There you go. That's the brain teaser.
That's right. One analogy we like to use, it isn't necessarily descriptive of our universe, is, you know, imagining a universe on the surface of an expanding balloon. And, you know, in that case, if your universe is only at the surface of the balloon, from any location in the balloon, it looks like everything is expanding around you, except, you know, you could head off in one direction and you would never find an edge. That may not be the geometry of the universe, but you know, it gives a good picture of how your intuition can fail you when trying to understand how the universe can be expanding.
But you have a mental picture of it. I mean, more than just mathematics, you can see it mentally what you're talking about.
On some days, I can.
It's not what Richard Feynman talked about when he said about quantum mechanics. You know that famous phrase. If anybody tells you that they understand it, they're lying. All they know is that it works. You know.
No, that's right. We really do understand this, actually.
Okay.
Whereas, as Feynman said, nobody understands quantum mechanics.
Yeah. We know that theories, and to be correct, have to make predictions. Einstein's theories have all made predictions. Is there a theory about the dark energy that would make a prediction so that we can test it and find that test?
Well, I would say a simple prediction that was made, you know, when I was on your show 5 or 6 years ago talking about the discovery of dark energy, and one obvious prediction was that if we probed further back in the history of the universe, dark energy would be weak, and we would actually see the universe slowing down before it began speeding up. That is a prediction that we did verify by observing more distant supernovae. We have seen, indeed, that the universe decelerated before it began accelerating, but in terms of there are other predictions, maybe Sean could go into some of those, about what various flavors of dark energy might act like.
Let's go to the theorist. Sean?
Sure. Well, for one thing, even the vanilla-flavored dark energy made a very strong prediction. If it's 70% of the energy in the universe, and Einstein tells us that energy curves space-time, then that should contribute a lot to the curvature of space-time. Mm-hmm. And that made a prediction which observations of our cosmic microwave background verified to very high precision. So even if all of Adam's work was completely wrong, which no one in their right mind would think it were, but we would still believe in dark energy because there's independent pieces of evidence for it. Mm-hmm. Now, the more exciting thing, if we go beyond vanilla dark energy to all sorts of peppermint dark energy, then there are ways to detect it perhaps in the laboratory. It could give rise to very weak forces here on Earth. It could make the charge of the electron change throughout space and time. It could change the law of gravity on small scales as well as large scales. So we're really looking at this problem from every possible angle because it's so perplexing to us. We need all the help we can get, hoping for another breakthrough to improve our theories.
We're talking about cosmology this hour on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. I'm having a deja vu here. I imagine I'm back in a laboratory 100 years ago. And I say, we need to do a Michelson-Morley experiment to find that dark energy, or let's call it the ether, if you will. You know, is it that mysterious?
I would say people often ask whether or not the dark energy is sort of a revival of the idea of the ether. But it's, in fact, exactly the opposite of the ether for two reasons. One is that the whole point of the ether was to set a cosmic rest frame with respect to which you could judge your velocity. And the dark energy doesn't do that. Everything is moving at the same speed with respect to the dark energy. But more importantly, the ether was something which had been predicted by theorists and eventually was given up on because no experimentalist could find it. The dark energy is something that no theorist wanted. The experimentalists, like Adam, went out and found it, and now we have to deal with it, like it or not.
Does string theory explain it good enough for you?
Oh, not yet. I mean, that's certainly a big goal. So string theory is an attempt to unify our understanding of particle physics with our understanding of gravity. Any decent theory that purports to do that should explain the dark energy. And so the finding of dark energy has certainly inspired string theorists to think hard about this, and they've come up with new ideas, often involving gajillions of extra universes outside anything we could ever observe. But still, the question is very much open. That's one of the things that we're shooting for a better understanding of.
I would say one similarity with the Michelson-Morley experiment is we know so little about dark energy, we'll try almost any crazy experiment at this point. If anybody has a suggestion of a theory or a model which could be validated by an experiment, we're ready to do it because, you know, times are that crazy again that we're willing to try almost anything.
I'm going to send my mail to you.
I get tons of it already, so please don't.
I'm sure you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
1-800-989-8255 is a number talking about, I think, my favorite subject, and that is what is the universe made out of and how little we know. Let's go to Laurie in Syracuse. Hi, Laurie.
Hello. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm not a scientist or anything, so I just got an idea, and I just thought I would ask you since you're all-knowing. But I was wondering if you were saying that there's possibly an energy in the middle of the universe that may be expanding outward, and that's why the universe is expanding. Could it be the other way around? Could there be space around the universe that may be pulling on the universe, you know, stretching it out, kind of like your rubber sheet theory, like maybe something's pulling on the edges of it?
So we're like a bubble. Outward? We're like a bubble inside another universe or something.
Something, or there's just space that's around the universe that might not have as much activity that might be pulling on, I know you said there weren't edges of the universe, but might be pulling outward, pulling the universe outward.
I'll ask our theorist, Sean, because I know Adam's never going to find the evidence for that.
Well, no, that's not at all true, actually.
No? Okay.
So the first response to such a suggestion is, oh, come on, that's crazy. But like Adam said, we're on the lookout for crazy ideas. One thing to keep in mind is that the universe is actually, it is not being pulled from its edges because there are no edges. It's being pushed, if you like, every little bit of it from within every other little bit. So on the other hand, string theorists and other people have suggested that there might be extra dimensions of space that we don't observe yet. And the effect of these extra dimensions of space feeds into the amount of dark energy that there is. So this is a scenario, if you like. No one has turned it into an idea to explain the amount of dark energy that's out there. But it's a testable scenario. Mm-hmm. You can go look for extra dimensions, for example, in particle accelerators. And that's why we need not just observations of the universe, but ground-based experiments to discover new things about small-scale physics, because they might very well end up giving us the key to understanding the dark energy.
Adam, he's being so diplomatic.
Well, you know, it's an interesting suggestion. I think, you know, one of the principles that we hold dear and have tested many times is that the universe is a very uniform place on average. What I mean by that is, I mean, if we look at the Earth, if we look at any local place, it might be made of water, it might be made of dirt. But once we look at large pieces of the Earth, like a quarter of it or half of it, then there's a certain fraction that's water and a certain fraction that's dirt. It's both. It's a mixture. It isn't like half the Earth is dirt and the other half is water. And so a lot of these suggestions are rooted in the belief that the universe might look the way it does to us here, and then on the other side of the universe, it's completely different, and we're being yanked by that other side, and that is not the model that we have of the universe. If there is something, you know, utterly mysterious on the other side of the universe, it's unknowable to us, and therefore we are trying to rely on the physics we can understand to explain the universe.
Okay, Laurie? Thanks for calling. 1-800-989-8255. We just have a couple of minutes left, so I want to cover a little bit of something else that crossed my desk the other day in terms of some research. I was reading a New Scientist magazine, one of my favorite magazines, and the article in there was entitled Seeds of Doubt for Theory of Inflation, and we're not talking about the economics theory here, there was something wrong. Some images that were coming in from the COBE telescope and the WMAP image observatory stuff that was coming in as the small, very, very small array in the Canary Islands, things like that, that maybe the whole idea about inflation in the early universe is not right. Are you familiar with that, Dr. Carroll?
I'm familiar with it. It's an intriguing result, but I think it's very premature to say that it calls inflation into question right now. It's one of these things, unlike when dark energy was first discovered in 1998, it went from being no one believing in it to boom, there was this extremely solid result. This is more of a tantalizing result at the edge of something that might turn out to be true or not. So it's something to absolutely follow up on. But inflation has a lot of stuff going for it. We are a long way from showing that it's right, but it's very attractive from various points of view. So if we want to say we've ruled it out, we're going to need some rock solid evidence against it. And that's not there yet.
Mm-hmm. Adam, you have any comments or just
listening? I'm not familiar with his work, but I have to say Sean's an awful smart guy. So, you know, if he's skeptical, then you know, I have to go with what he says.
All right. That's one
check
point.
Is in the mail.
2 points for you today. 1-800-989-825. Let me ask you, Adam, looking for another supernova, anything on the horizon there, so to speak?
Yes, we're currently using the Hubble Space Telescope this year to try to push further and look for more distant supernovae.
All right, we've run out of time. We'll have you back to talk more about it, both of you. Thank you very much for taking time to talk with us this hour. Adam Reese and Sean Carroll talking about dark matter, dark energy. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to bring on Craig Venter, who's going to talk about his trips around. Well, he's going to take a tour of the oceans and see what lives down there and try to extract the DNA from it. So stay with us. We'll be right back and talk with him about it.